It's kind of interesting to try to troubleshoot with what little I know, and it's a huge accomplishment when you figure something out and you fix it and record it. What's that? Oh, someone has a mask. Cool.
That's a picture.
That's me. Oh. It's just a picture. It's driving Larry nuts because I bought a new laptop so that I could have a camera, and I haven't set it up yet.
What kind of laptop did you get?
Dell.
Okay.
My Dell.
How much setting up do you need, Bonnie?
It's well, like transferring her stuff from her old laptop.
Yeah. And it's, there's a boatload. And you know, to me, it's not a fun job. So consequently, just about anything comes before this.
Okay. But
I have to get Dick excited about it.
You could set up Zoom on the new computer without transferring anything from the old one.
I told her that a couple of weeks ago.
Poor Larry. He's nearly given up on me.
I'm a Dell that I got, and it's a fairly high-end Dell. The camera would freeze after 20 minutes, so I ended up having to get an external one.
Oh, geez. I've been Dell since the very, very early days of Dell, and have nothing but love for them, except that, you know, I'm such an iPad and iPhone person that, you know.
You can do Zoom on an iPad.
I know, yeah. But I haven't figured out where I can put it that it doesn't show 16 chins.
All right, well, you can put the mask back on.
Okay, point taken. Okay, by next time, I will have my act together.
I'd really like to see your whole face, Bonnie. I mean, I've met you only by a picture.
Half a picture.
Yeah, that's true. It isn't even a whole picture.
There's a resemblance to my brother-in-law, and I thought maybe he was playing some sort of practical joke.
Oh, thank you. All right. I guess I deserve it.
There was no offense intended there.
That's fine. That's funny. Karen, how are you doing?
It's a little quiet right now. I finished a project for Timberline Lodge, which is a commission I've had since the late 70s. Over time, I've accumulated 350 yards I've done for the historic lodge, which is quite an achievement. But, you know, if you do, 10 yards here, 20 yards there, 50 yards there, sometimes 100 yards for the lodge. And it's kind of my project where it's not my work. It's historic. So I am replicating the original fabrics that were in the Timberline Lodge of Mount Hood built in 1937. And there's a large group of other artists that help maintain this historic lodge in the original condition. So it's a real honor to be a part of that. It's great to have a project like that to end the year with. And I'm just now starting to scratch my head about what it's going to look like for me this spring. I think it's going to be pretty quiet, but that's okay. I do have a workshop I want to teach by Zoom, and I have a steep learning curve to become familiar enough on my end to manage a workshop. So that's the challenge I've set, and sure, I'm intimidated by it, but we'll get there.
You know, you could run a session like this for us as a
test. As a test?
Yeah, as a way to get your feet wet.
That'd be great. It's really about learning to use the phone as the second camera. Having the sewing studio set up to work for a workshop. And I need a little broader view. And of course, I did figure out that I needed to have an Ethernet cable hardwired from the house to the sewing studio. So I have a 100-foot cable that goes across the grass. and that was the only way I had a consistent connection. The Wi-Fi just is not going to work that way. So those are some things I learned a few months ago, and little by little we'll solve it. I wonder if my ThinkPad laptop will have enough memory to support running a workshop with, you know, 8 to 10 people. I have no idea.
Do you, how much memory does it have?
Well, see, I don't even know how to figure that out. It probably has a lot. I know it has a lot of storage.
How old is it?
It's about 4 years old.
It probably is fine. It might be underpowered.
There's a program called BellArc Advisor.
Okay.
BellArc.
All right.
And it'll let you know everything you have on the laptop.
All right. BellArc Advisor.
BellArc, A-R-C.
Okay.
BellArc Advisor.
Got it. I'll do that. Thank you. It's very helpful. You guys are always helpful.
I think this machine I'm using is about 4 years old, mm-hmm. and I have been running Zoom sessions on it for all year.
Mm-hmm.
Had as many as 40 people on it, I think.
Oh, that's a lot. Okay, that says something. That's good.
Well, you see all nine of us now, right?
Right, right. Yeah.
Why would any more or less make a difference?
I wasn't sure, but I do know that if you use your phone as a second camera, the phones start to get hot. So I kind of have to, part of this is I have to educate the users as well as myself. I have to get them ready for a workshop with the technology.
I think you might be surprised how adept your users may already be.
But Karen, I think they'll probably know more than I will.
That may well be. Karen, do you know who Allison Adelman is?
Yes, I do.
She runs killer Zoom workshops. I was a beta tester for her.
Yes, I was thinking about asking her if I could observe. Yeah.
She runs a great one. Her husband, Eric, can tell you anything.
Yeah, I have talked to them. I have talked to them already. So I guess this month what's going to happen is my sewing studio is going to be turned into a production studio for videos. And that means covering the windows, adding the lighting, making sure I have all the plugins I need. And then it's really about figuring out the camera angles. Can I show the work on the desktop? And I'm talking about my cutting table, not the computer. As well as have a phone that's on a stand that it's steady, not wobbly, to have a second view. And then it's really about getting familiar with dealing with 8 to 10 people on the screen with questions and observations.
You might actually want to hand carry the phone around as a mobile camera.
Well, rather than hand carry, because it gets some people get vertigo from the motion.
Okay.
I have a couple of little stands that will work, and then I can bring, then it's at least a little less wobbly. I'm also going to suggest that the users, the workshop takers, find a way to kind of minimize the wobble as well. Yeah, it'll be interesting. So what I'm doing, these are hand weavers who've woven fabric and they want to make garments. They're scared to death of cutting the fabric. So I'm going to use trash bags and give them all a kit, if you will, of different sizes and textures and colors. And we're going to go through the steps of what you have to do to analyze what you have and before you make the decision to cut. So we're going to do it for fun. We're going to make trash bag garments, but it's going to give them some of the design process.
That sounds like a great event.
That sounds like
such a good idea.
So it's designed to be fun. You don't have to worry about the outcome, and you're not cutting your precious handwoven fabric.
Sounds good. Well, I would definitely talk to Allison and Eric.
I will again.
It was amazing.
She mentioned to me already that one advantage she has is that her tabletop view is much narrower, more narrow than mine would be, because she's doing jewelry and it's a smaller focus. When you're talking about cutting garments, pattern pieces are larger. That's what I have to work out with camera angles about how to show some of that so it's effective.
Actually, I think that's going to be easier than what she's got.
Okay.
Because you can back up and get a wider shot.
True.
But it's real hard when you're dealing with flames and so on to get close-up shots of what she's doing so that everyone can see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the flame throws the exposure off.
Oh, okay.
Well, and burn up your eyebrows. You know.
Yeah.
But, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to mount the camera overhead, right?
Well, I'm going to raise it, definitely, so it can point down.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Should I get a microphone?
Yes.
I don't know. I would try it first using the built-in mic.
This is my built-in mic here.
Well,
I wondered if I
needed
the headset.
This sounds fine right now.
Okay.
It depends on how far away you're going to get from the computer, I think. But again, this is something you should play with before the workshop. You could play with this now. Just walk back 10 feet and talk to us.
All right, let's try it. Do you hear me now?
Not quite as loud, but I can hear you adequately.
Okay. Yeah. I think we'll get it to work.
Yeah, even Allison sounded better today.
Yeah, I've been having trouble with volume, and so I went in and turned all the volume. This was originally a gaming computer, so it's got like three different kinds of microphones, and trying to figure out which one is which and which one works better.
So you sound a little bit in a well right now.
Yeah.
But when you first came on, you sounded much better.
Let me try this. Yeah, let me try these other ones. See what happens. How's that?
Not too different.
Not too different? Okay. And then...
Silence.
Nothing.
In the system. How's that?
Better.
Quiet, but fine.
Let me see if I can turn that one up.
Is there any way to turn the volume up on the mic?
That's what I've got it all. I went to my audio settings. Okay. This one's not very, no, not test, same as system. Okay, volume. That's not test. I don't want to test it.
Well, I'll admit that I'm really excited about doing the Zoom meeting as an alternative to an actual three-day weekend at the Guild, in a different city. I'm also terrified of the technology of getting how to present a workshop through Zoom, which is so different than in person. I have to get a lot more organized. I really like the contact and the one-on-one when you're in a group and you're solving these problems together and someone can look over your shoulder and say, oh, I really want to see what she's doing because I might need to do that too. I just like the way that a group can interact when you're together. It'll be interesting to see if we can duplicate the same rapport.
I think you'll be surprised because you really do get, oh, let's see what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You get, now, okay, for a jewelry Zoom, what we found is we could see so much more.
Okay.
And I hope you find the same thing.
All right. Do any of you have experience with the breakout room on Zoom?
I've never run one, but I've been in them.
Can you explain to me how it works?
Roughly speaking, the host assigns people either specifically or at random to a breakout room, and you pick a number of people and you click some buttons and they're in the breakout room. And you, as the host, have the ability to send messages to the breakout room, and you have the ability to end the breakout and bring them back.
Mm-hmm. I don't see any buttons. But
You have to be the host.
Right.
You have to be the host to be able to do it.
Right. Yeah. I'm trying to come up with a strategy where I can have three people working on their project and kind of exit Zoom so they have time to actually put something together and then return. And I was wondering if the breakout room would be a good method for that.
It doesn't sound like it. If they need to be able to be heads down and not distracted by talking to anybody, you could just say, okay, we're reconvening in 15 minutes or in half an hour, mm-hmm. and just kill the meeting and restart it.
Mm-hmm. Or leave it open and have people return. Yeah.
Yeah, leave it open and have people return. I mean,
okay.
But if they have questions,
mm-hmm.
I would think you'd want to keep it open.
Tell everybody, turn the cameras off and keep the chat open. And if you have any questions, type in chat.
Yeah. Okay.
There's usually a question thing too, or you can set that up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to morph into being a teacher. So here we go.
Somehow I think the profit margin will be better than shows right now.
Well, yeah, I am one of those people who don't want to contribute to the spread of the virus. I'm one of those people who's at greater risk for contracting the virus. So I have the least amount of confidence about even attempting to do shows or galleries or exhibitions. Right now, staying at home is probably the smartest thing for me to do.
Yep, me too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, me too.
But I'm excited and envious to see that some people are out there and they're having success. That bodes well for us when we all do return.
You know, I have been last year, most of my work has actually been teaching people one-on-one. And of course, I have an advantage that screen sharing works for me. So mm-hmm. I teach people how to build their websites in Weebly or whatever platform they want. We share the screen and they do the work, and I just tell them, okay, do this, do that. And they ask me any questions, and periodically I'll take over the screen for a minute or two if they need me to.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it's very interactive. It's very personal. It's not the same as being in the room, but it's so much more convenient. And we're relating as human beings to each other, and it's fun. So more people is less personal, but it's still, it still works.
We need both the stimulation and the conversations with other people. Right. Isolation works for some of us for a great deal of time, and we're fine with it. But after a point, we really need to communicate, right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One suggestion is, Karen, everything you do, document, take notes, so that when you hit something that works really well, you know how to repeat it.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, I would ask permission and record everything so you can watch it, dispassionately as opposed to being participating.
Absolutely. And my fallback strategy, if there is issues for any of the participants that they can't see the program or be there full time, if I do record it, then it's available to them afterwards.
Right.
And I think, yeah.
You might want to try just get a friend to do a one-on-one class with.
Yeah.
Just as a learning exercise.
Sure. It's a good idea.
Can you simultaneously record it as maybe a YouTube type video?
I guess you should ask Larry that question, because I know he has these meetings are available, right? as a recording?
No, I delete the recordings, but I keep the audio of each one. Okay. There's no reason to have it. The video is such a large file.
Mm-hmm. I did my video for my Ventany page, but because I have a hard time memorizing everything and then I get flustered and mess it up. So I actually put up Zoom and then put my dialogue in the Word document over the screen, just enough so I could see the record button. And then I would record and read my, you have to remember to be facial so it doesn't look like you're reading. But, and then make sure you smile at the end and cut off the record, because there'll be, so then I can go in and cut off and trim it. And that's how I made my video on the Ventany page. And you're not looking at yourself, which makes it a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure, you know, I've never tried it, Karen, but I'm pretty sure you could take a Zoom session and post it on YouTube after the fact.
Yeah, with the link. Yeah,
well, when you record it, it takes the names off.
Good. That's probably good. Yeah. Well, the other thing I'm doing today, I decided, this is way outside my usual box, I am going to take a Zoom class with an influencer who makes a career of promotion. And he's teaching a free social media class. His name is Brandon Gaston. And he's a lovely man. And he, I don't know. So I'm in the textile fashion world. And I've kind of long wanted to get off the streets of art fairs with my fashion, and don't really have a connection in my rural community to do this. So Brandon has had a focus in Portland, Oregon, Phoenix, New York, whatever. I'm going to take a workshop from him. He's looking at my webpage. I'll come back next week and let you know when I find out.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty funny, but I'm going to try.
Hey, I think this is great, Karen. Go for it.
I've taken a lot of that kind of workshop.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely love it. The only thing is, I start feeling very old.
Yeah, I know.
These are kids running it. And yeah. I'm so thrilled. But yes, yeah. I've gotten a lot out of them.
Okay, good. Part of it is I've been doing more social media, making short videos, Instagram and Facebook. I am getting messages now that Apple and Facebook don't want to play together well, and they're going to kind of change the algorithm of how our work is seen if we're posting, especially if you're trying to sell through Instagram or Facebook. I have no idea how that's really going to affect this, but they're giving us these announcements that it's coming. So why do I spend all my time and energy trying to expand my audience if somebody else is squeezing the pipeline closed? So we'll see what happens with that.
What are they warning you? I mean, because...
Well, they're saying that the applications aren't going to play together well, that Apple and Facebook have some disagreements about right. how things are shared. And yes. it will affect who we're marketing to.
Facebook advertising, I think, is the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Apple doesn't like the way Facebook is using the iPhone and the iPad.
Right.
But if you are making a video and you're posting it on Instagram, I don't think it may be possible that Facebook could know that it was made on an Apple device, but it could be run through a different program that would remove that information.
Hmm.
So then it would be neutral, and they wouldn't have any reason to blackball it.
Hmm. Okay.
There's also a suit to break up Facebook, make them, disassociate from Instagram again, and make those separate entities.
That will take years of litigation.
Yeah, I know, but it's starting, so...
All right, but by the Hopefully. The technology will be substantially different, and the social media world will be substantially different by the time that litigation comes to an end. And, you know, it's several years at the earliest.
I got the sense that it was more Facebook advertising, like when I went in and bought a cat tree off Amazon, next thing I know, there's all these cat tree ads coming up on Facebook for me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, bought it, guys.
Yeah, I've always thought it was really dumb that people would advertise to you just after you bought something. It's like, mm-hmm. don't you have more sense and better things to do with your money?
Especially on a cat tree. That's like, we buy one once every 10 years.
Right. Yeah, we renovated my house so my sister could move in, and we bought furniture. And you know, you buy furniture and then you've got the furniture. You don't need more furniture for years. Furniture ads for 6 months.
Well, yeah, but what it's doing, it's reading what you've looked at, not what you've purchased.
Yeah, and that's silly. Because I always thought that was cool. I looked at a jewelry site, and the next thing you know, I'm getting ads on Facebook, and I thought, how do I do that?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably expensive.
Bonnie, I'm thinking about what you said about age and working with these young people about learning the social media. I find this a particularly delicate line that I walk, in that I hire models that are size 2 or size 4, and they're young, and they're wearing, I have to design for younger people. But yet I kind of minimize how much contact people have of seeing me physically, since I just turned 69, and hair's getting a little grayer. It's like, do I want to promote that image that I'm the older designer, but I'm marketing to younger people? We don't know.
Well, it's experience, not age.
Yes.
True.
That is a very valid point, because I'm kind of careful on that too.
Mm-hmm.
Because my customer base is younger.
Mm-hmm.
So do they want to buy from a gray-haired old lady?
Yeah.
Or somebody that...
both kinds of customers. I have young customers who are in the workplace who need to dress well, or at least I did until this year. I also have a lot of older women who are well-established and who can afford to buy beautiful clothing because they want to look their best. They may not have the model's figure at that point in life, but therefore they relate to me, since I am a mature woman as well. So I have to think about both markets.
Yep, me too.
Mm-hmm.
Do the Xander Rhodes look?
I don't know who that is.
She is a designer, but her stuff is out there. It's like stuff ripped and held together with safety pins and her evening dress.
Okay.
She has bright pink hair. She designs the costumes and sets for, Magic Flute Opera.
Oh, okay.
I think she's West Coast, but... the Mingay Museum had a whole exhibit of her stuff, and it was...
That sounds fantastic.
Fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, not my style, though, right?
No, I know, but...
I didn't style your whole thing.
So my favorite fashion-forward tip for this month is that I have bought a pair of short wellies that go above my ankles. I live in Oregon. We have had an atmospheric river dump a tremendous amount of rain. In our area, I live on the coast, so we have high tides, king tides, and gale force storms. So having a good-looking pair of rubber boots is like the fashion thing you have to have this month.
Well, I hope they're cute.
They're pretty good. They're a pale gray with a yellow accent, and I can get them on and off easily, and there's a little reflective strip so you can see me in the dark. So we're good.
Well, you need some flowers or something. Jazz them up.
Okay, we'll jazz them up. So is it cold where the rest of you are?
Yes.
By our standards, yes.
It's actually warmer today than it has been, but it's supposed to be about 50, which is actually balmy for this time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, here in Michigan, we have a little bit of snow on the ground, but we've had almost nothing this year, which has been very strange. I'm not complaining.
It's almost 60 here.
Wow.
But it drops down into the 40s at night, which is freezing as far as San Diego is concerned. And some of my succulents have not liked it. It's been that way for a few weeks. And they're showing cold stress.
We had a major ice storm and lost power for 2 days. And I found out something that if you have the anchor powerhouse, you have to keep it charged now and then. Because one of mine died and it hasn't been charged since I did my last show, which was October of 19. So I had to order a new one.
Hmm. I just recharged my Yeti battery that I use for my tent. It's just like it was, okay, I anticipate the power going off. Make sure that battery's charged and it's sitting there ready to go.
I told my husband, we were talking about getting a whole house generator.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I've got the powerhouses, we can charge phones. And during the time, you know, that was the thing about that was the biggest problem was I'd go plug my phone into my truck and start it up and sit there while it charged. Because all you've got to do when the power's out is hook at your phone, and so I kept having to charge it up again. Mm-hmm. But I got one powerhouse that works. I generally use two. They go about 7.5 hours for a show to run my lights, and if it's a long show, then I'll use two. Otherwise, I'll just put two in the booth before I start, and then I can run one each day.
Karen, what size Yeti do you have?
I'd have to go look. I spend a lot of time trying to figure out what I needed to run lights. The best thing about the Yeti is that my husband surprised me, and he got the little cart, the little wheelie cart that goes under the battery.
Oh, yes.
Best thing ever. You know, it's just I'm getting too old to lug a battery back to the hotel room, but without wheels. So this one has this telescoping handle, so it makes it really easy to get it in the booth and out of the booth. But the Yeti has been a great asset to have, and it's working for me. I went through a lot of inverters that didn't work, burned them up, or they just...
Oh, yeah.
It was too hard. Using a marine battery, it was too heavy. It was just...
Too heavy, and I wanted one that I could take and put in the booth, and then... out of the booth at the end of the show, and that was just that, those were like
too hard. Yeah,
and then tried to charge them overnight. No,
mm-hmm.
So with the powerhouse because it was only 10 pounds.
Okay, so a Yeti's probably a little heavier than that, but it's a good battery.
Well, I come from the days of using marine deep cycle batteries, and I could have like. Ann Arbor was 4 days and each day was 12 days long. Oh. I could run my lights and my fans. That's more important than lights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for 4 days using two of them. And you could leave them in the booth overnight. You didn't have to recharge them, but also nobody's going to take them.
They're too heavy.
Yeah. And they're ugly. They don't, you know.
Have the Ryobi fans, which I love, and I actually got for home use the Ryobi vacuum cleaner, which is so cool because it's, I mean, and the thing lasts forever, the battery on it lasts forever. I just use it to clean up cat litter.
I love my Ryobi fans.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I got the light, too, for when there's not enough light for setup, although I use the powerhouse for lights during the show.
Well, it's funny. I was looking at the Ryobi lights, and then they started coming out with more and more, and I couldn't decide which ones, and then all this came up, and
yeah,
so I haven't done anything.
Once we actually get back to art fairs, I think we'll we're going to be doing a lot of redesigning of the booth.
I just had to setting up.
I'm sorry, I couldn't understand that one.
I just had the spotlight one for setting up in the dark or breaking down in the dark.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
I find the batteries, the lithium batteries are so much better.
Mm-hmm. I used to do Park City shows, and sometimes I'd set up at 4 a.m. It's dark. So it was handy to have the batteries so you could plug in those lights. Yes, so you see what you're doing.
I remember setting up at a show once and turning the van to face the booth because I was the first one there, and starting it up and turning the lights on. And that's the only way I could see.
Fun times.
Oh, yeah.
Good memories.
Did anybody see the email this morning from Art Fair Insiders? It was entirely people selling booths.
I saw that. Yes, like, I saw that.
Are we a lot of people throwing in the towel, you think?
Yes, yes.
Yes.
I want to tell you, I have a brand new tent, so I'm coming back.
Well, it's interesting how many of my friends have discovered that they can have a decent enough year without art fairs because shows have gotten so expensive.
Well, I'm not there yet.
The way Art Fair Insiders, their email, what do you call it? The way that works is it pulls things that are posted as blogs automatically. And a lot of the artists have figured that out where they're not putting their stuff for sale in the forums where it's supposed to go. They're advertising it as a blog. So it gets sent out in the email. You know, and again, nobody looks at that. It happens automatically according to their schedule.
Well, if you really want to sell things like that, you need to put it up on the Artist Garage group. Now, I'm an admin, so that's my commercial, but boy, things really move well through that site.
I bought my tent. That was at Virginia Beach where I watched my tent going, and we were putting the top on, and three people are holding the top down, and one person is trying to press the Velcro, and I said, I'm getting a third one. And I sat there at Virginia Beach and talked to the lady over Facebook.
Well, I have funny little things. Every time I go into the garage where I've unloaded all of my, we had to put an addition on the garage so that I could keep all my art fair stuff there. And I look at things that, like, I bought mesh panels and never have had a chance to use them yet. And I've got all kinds of cool stuff.
I think I have enough to open a store, enough display equipment.
Yep.
I think about that.
I've been selling what doesn't fit in the van. I bought that trim line. It was a 10, 15, 20 trim line, and I've sold the pieces for the 15 and the 20. So I just have the 10 foot. And then it was also a tall one. I sold those pieces.
Well, hopefully you made enough to almost pay for the 10 by 10.
Well, I sold my old craft cup, which is like 10 years old, for the same price I bought the trim line for. But of course, I've added a new top. I made a great deal on walls because it was the tall one. So I traded my tall walls for regular walls with some guy who had just bought a tent. So I got brand new walls.
Great. I loved my old craft hut. Mm. Oh my goodness.
I did not love putting it up. I always had to have help.
Yep. Me too.
And usually I go to a man and a woman or, you know, people. So I wouldn't take someone away from setting up. And he'd tell the short little lady to say, I'll go give the car a hand. And there's two of us short trying to get the top on.
But boy, if there was a big storm, that's the booth I wanted to be in.
My stretcher bar holding the tent, the top part across the back, that's what went at Virginia Beach. And so that's why my tent was going just like this.
Oh, that's exactly what would happen.
Yeah. And so that's when I went to the trim line.
Well, I'm currently using a light dome.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm using the light dome that I bought a long, 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 long time ago. I went from to a light dome to, back and forth.
I did some virtual art fairs in the backyard this summer and fall. And we had this unusual windstorm that completely turned my light dome into a pretzel. I was just stunned to see the damage that happened. Immediately after those windstorms, we had fire here in this area. So, but that's another story, but it's an Oregon story. So my tent was in my own backyard. It was weighted. It was strapped. It was as good as it's going to get. X's across the sides, everything. And this was a freak windstorm that completely turned it into a pretzel. I was so glad I was at home. I had remembered to pay for my ACT insurance, and I'm so glad I did, because that was a perfect application of, here's the documentation of what happened, and I now have a new light dome tent. And I found that my old tent had some aspects to it with snaps and Velcro that they no longer use, and the new tent is going to be easier for me to put up. So that was a good thing that happened.
You were lucky you were at home.
I was very grateful that I was at home. I've been in a lot of weather in a lot of different situations. I've had, you know, 4 sandbags, well, 2 on each, 50-pound sandbags on each corner of a booth in Omaha, and had the wind, the tent just get lifted up by the wind. It's pretty scary what we do.
Yep. Charlotte, North Carolina, freak microburst. I'd never even heard of microbursts, came through. And we had, I was screwed into the street. I had all my proper weights on. And we had 4 adults, each holding on to one side of the booth. And the panels were down. The sides were down. And we couldn't hold it down. So I finally just said, you know, let it go, and everybody let go at the same time. And I found out the next day that one of my weights missed an artist's head by about 6 inches.
Oh God.
Yeah. Scared the living daylights out of me after that.
Salt Lake City was bad for microbursts too. In the middle of the summer, you can have these extreme winds. They just come right over the city buildings and pummel the tents.
Yep.
The glass artists lost all of their wares. So Salt Lake City was the art fair that had the best solution right after that experience. And I really wish that other art fairs would do the same thing. You pay the fee, and when you arrive to set up your booth, they have these huge concrete boulders with a loop at the top for each tent to tie into on either side. So you've got the space that would be between the tents. They've taken forklifts and put these huge concrete boulders. Ooh. And we just tie into it. And once they started doing that, nobody lost their tents ever.
I love that.
Yeah.
What you got to look forward to.
I wish more shows would do it.
Yeah.
Unmute, Bill.
Bill, you're muted.
There. There you are.
Sorry. There was a show in Fort Worth a few years ago that it wiped it right out. The windstorms and the rain and the microbursts. I was just trying to think how, what would be a good solution to that? Have an outdoor event near a building that you could bring people indoors if, I don't know.
Well, the cities have to figure out those kind of emergency evacuations. Peoria had 2 tornado alerts last time I was there, same weekend. And it really was about, they had to be prepared to tell us to leave immediately. And of course we didn't, because we wanted to cover our work and put down the tent walls, but we really needed to get out of there. It was a safety issue.
Yeah.
I love doing Columbus, because there were storms the one time I did it, and they kept coming through with the little golf carts saying, weather's coming, bend down.
Mm-hmm.
Love when shows give you a heads up.
Yeah, a lot of the shows have gone to a text system for those kind of weather alerts, and I thought that was a great, great solution, you know, because then we got the information.
Yeah, because before we all had all the apps, it was rough, but it was kind of fun for me.
Weather radios.
Oh, yeah. I always had my NOAA weather radio. But if I was at home and my friends were doing a show, they would call Doppler Bonnie, and I would get on the computer and find out what was coming their way.
Yeah.
I miss all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, it brought you close together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did the show decide? And we were all looking at our weather radio, our apps, and this little spot of hell broke off from the main storm, because they were telling us, oh, we're getting nothing. And it tore that show up. Man, things flying everywhere.
How often does that happen?
More than we'd like.
More than we like.
Many times.
It depends on, I did 2018 when I did all those shows, every single one was horrible weather. And yet I've had years where I haven't had any bad weather at all. It's crazy.
There are more and more weather events as time goes on.
There's enough heat and humidity at the Midwest shows that it's changing the kind of fabric that I make. I have to change the fabric because I don't know if it's climate change, but it's just too hot to look at clothing. So it's having an impact on me, and it'll be curious to see what I come up with. It's going to be different.
Gosh.
Yeah, there was a local show here. I think it was October, November in the fall. And, the weather was bad. It was outdoors. And I got up and took a look at it. It's like, well, I'm not going to do this. This is just, this isn't fun. If it's not fun, I'm not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the luxury of being, you know, close to home. Now that I'm starting to broaden my horizon and look at other venues and other shows, it's like, you know, I really need to maybe put some more thought in this and think it over. I can't think of anything worse than standing in the rain and watching all your projects just run and get smashed. And
insurance.
Make sure you're well insured.
Yeah, that was my next question.
Yeah. ACT insurance. I highly recommend it. Insure for one show. It's called ACT insurance. Okay. It's for actors, crafters, and tradespeople. And you can get insurance that will cover one show, or it will cover the whole year. And it covers everything in my van, even if I'm, you know, at home or on the road. So for $265 a year, I took the full year coverage.
That's a great idea.
Not so bad insurance is, when I was at, I think it was Sarasota, and the guy next to me had a big painting on the outside wall, and we were right next to the $150,000 Tesla, and it blew off and just missed it.
Oh, gosh.
One thing you have to make sure. One thing you have to make sure that you have is liability insurance.
Yeah. Correct.
If yeah. your canopy goes flying and it runs into someone, like my story of the weight, I did everything right and I could have killed someone.
Yep. And you would have been responsible for the.
You got it.
Yeah.
And it would have been my fault.
I carry. I think I pay State Farm $325 a year. I've got coverage for my tax. Plus $1 million liability.
Hey there.
Mine costs me $800 a year for everything in the studio, on the road. It does not cover the jewelry because that's that's a different ball game. But at least I know that I am covered should something happen. Should somebody trip over something in my booth and whatever. We're a litigious society. You have to make sure that you are covered for it.
Yes,
true.
And make sure the person you sue can afford a good payment.
That's kind of a shame. I was in a traffic accident back in June and didn't do anything. Car swerved over into my lane. I got over as far as I could to avoid the collision. And he came over and he tapped my front end. And I had liability, but not collision. And dealing with the insurance people, it was just a nightmare. I learned very quickly the difference between liability and collision. And I ended up paying for the whole thing out of my pocket, which was, it was uncomfortable, but it wasn't unbearable, if that makes any sense. I liked the car. I didn't want to get a new vehicle at that time. And when I think about insurance, I wonder what the world would be like if there were no insurance. And people bonded together and helped each other out instead of relying on a larger organizational structure to solve those kind of problems.
Isn't that socialism?
Yeah, it sounds like the accident wasn't your fault.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
Well, liability is if it's your fault, and collision is if it's your vehicle that's damaged.
Right, right. The other person's liability should have paid for his truck.
Okay. Yeah. One small detail I left out unintentionally was that they didn't have insurance.
Ah.
So the policeman that the officer that said, asked me if we had exchanged insurance information. I said, well, because I told the other party, I wasn't going to say anything. I said, I gave them mine. And he said, they didn't give you theirs. And I went, and I think he gave them a citation for uninsured vehicles, which, you know, again, you know, what are you going to do? You're caught.
Most states want you to carry uninsured motorist insurance. Florida's a no fault. Somebody hit me in Florida with no insurance, and basically I was stuck with it.
Yeah.
So we have to have uninsured motorists here, California.
Yeah, we do in Virginia as well.
I don't know what it actually does for you, but
it actually paid. I just hit in Virginia, and with the uninsured motorists, they paid for the fix and then went after the guy for the difference. And then once they got the difference, they paid my deductible back. Of course, to keep my insurance low in Florida, I was carrying $1,000 deductible, which was a lot more than the damage. feel frustrating.
I submitted a claim for the rental car and the towing and some of the incidental expenses, and you know, that was denied also. So it's like I couldn't walk away fast enough and get it behind me and just go forward with my life.
Yeah.
Dick was sitting at a light and during the winter, and he had just PL and PD on his car because it was old, but he loved it. And somebody rear-ended him. They didn't see that the people had stopped, and he ended up, his car was a mess, but he had to pay for the entire thing to be fixed. So, yeah.
With the van, hit my van in the parking lot, left me a note, and I was like, this ain't worth it. I haven't fixed it. It's an art show van, and I would have had to unload the whole thing to get it fixed, and I just let it go.
The gentleman at the body shop said, you know, your vehicle's only, you know, you can't sell it for scrap. It would be $100, $200. I said, well, you know, it's still worth $35,000 to me, which is what I paid for it. I'm going to fix it. Well, I'll fix it for you. I said, well, get after it. Fix it.
What kind of insurance do you have on it now?
Oh, gosh. It's minimal because it's so old. And I try to keep the cost down. The one coverage that I do have is roadside assistance. That's been a smart move. But the rest of it is just, do I really need it? I don't drive very far, and I don't drive very often. So I try to, you know, have a limited income, small budget, and just try to live within it. And sometimes it's not easy. Everybody knows that. It's not easy for anybody. But getting back to the shows, how many do each of you do, and how far do you get from home, from your base?
Well,
as many decent shows as you can get into.
It's nice to do a 15-hour radius from where you live. Sorry, Larry.
That's right. Yeah, I was going to say, and it's... As far as the quantity, depends on if you have a reason to have to go home every week or every night.
Mm-hmm. I had a client who used to do 25 shows a year, and I knew people who did 30.
I've done over 40.
I'm down to 9 in a normal year. And the furthest I've been is Florida for 800 miles. And I might go, I would go to Winter Park, but they won't let me in.
The last year, I probably did 10 shows, but I'm in Michigan, and I will go anywhere east of the Rockies, I guess.
Okay.
Since my work is mostly East Coast, it doesn't make sense for me to go to, you know, some of the Colorado shows or anything like that. So I stick pretty much, and plus it's mountains, so I stick pretty much to the East Coast now.
I'm on the West Coast, so my disadvantage is that everything is far away.
Yeah.
And I figured out that if I make a trip to St. Louis, I need to do at least the minimum of 3 shows on that trip. One show for expenses going out, one show for expenses coming home, and hopefully the third show is the profit. So that's my rule of thumb. If I make to the Midwest, I have to have the minimum of 3 shows, but often I'll do 5. But you've got to figure out a plan for what you're going to do for the time in between.
Karen, I never thought to ask you, what do you think about Art in the High Desert? I don't know if you did
I'm really sad. Oh, yeah. I'm one of their Benchmark Award winners. I've done it for many years. I love this show, and I'm really sad. I really think it's I offered to help, but it was too late. You know, I understand why they're not doing it. I wish that they had set up the show with a different model so that it would continue even without them. And I think that's what they didn't do. They didn't have the support. But there were other factors involved. One is that the site location has new owners and it was uncertain whether or not they would even have the same space. That's a big deal.
Yeah, that is.
And I think that a lot of the other decisions just got compounded. I wish there had been a board that had was set up so that it could have, they could have figured it out. And I understand that Carl and Dave, they've done it for 12 years. You know, they kind of want their life back too. But I'm going to miss it terribly. It was a wonderful show.
Yeah, Carl is a friend of mine. So mm-hmm. I've been following it closely.
I started to, you know, try and come up with solutions that might help. One is that maybe another group of artists needs to come together and take over or be a committee to help set up the show again. But there were enough factors that were uncertain, I think it'd be difficult. I thought, well, maybe the people at Art and the Pearl, that board could take this under their arm as an umbrella show. I just don't know. So
That's a good idea.
I stopped trying to find a solution.
Well, I was very sorry to hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of got the idea it wasn't that this was going to happen when she didn't want to try a virtual show. They didn't have the people, the resources, or they were struggling themselves that they just couldn't take on saving the art fair too.
Yeah. Oh boy. Well, it's hard, especially when it's a good show.
It's a very good show, and it's a very good population. They need us. And they want us. But it's really going to take people from that community to make it happen. And I live 5 hours away. So if there was a way I could help, I would. I just don't know what it is.
Well, it's a paying gig, so somebody could, you know.
I don't think Carla and Dave designed it so they ever got paid.
Well, they got paid.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
I remember I totally run a little show, and Carla told me what she got paid in the beginning of running her show before she got a big raise. And it was a lot more than I was making for running the whole show. And it's like, oh, yeah. No, it mm-hmm. was a paid position.
Mm-hmm. Good. Good. It should be. Absolutely yes. Should be.
I agree.
Yeah. It's a all-year job.
It is.
Well, anyway, if there is any movement on that and they need my help, please let somebody know.
Okay. Boy. Okay, well, on that happy note.
Yes, it's time to go feed the puppies.
Don't say it too loud. My two are right here. Don't think it's for them. They've got 5 hours before they get fed again.
I would like to do some work.
Well, it's nice to see you all again.
Yep. See you hopefully next week.
Take care, everyone.
Take care.
All right. Until then. Thanks, Larry.
All right. Bye, everybody.